education to employment and everything in between. It's a clearinghouse for all things shale. From Northeast PA, it's the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier and Rusty Fender on 94.3 FM, The Talker.
Good morning. Welcome to the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier and Rusty Fender. And I'm DC Taylor, the producer here. And we've got some more content for you. That's what they're calling it these days, right? Content. Here's some content. But no, this is great stuff. Friend of the show, Matt Henderson. He recently hosted some webinars and some great topics. So here comes another one for you. Check it out.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. It's my pleasure to welcome you. My name is Matt Henderson, and I'll be the host for the webinar series. Today is part one of the seven-part series. I would like to thank Jim Willis, who's on from the Marcellus Drilling News, who is our media partner for the series. If you haven't had a chance to check his website out at marcellusdrilling.com, he has a lot of articles and spends a lot of time going through the newsworthy articles, Appalachian Basin, to provide their perspective on key legislative, regulatory, operational, technological, and other factors that will help shape the industry's landscape for 2023. Our focus for today's webinar is on the opportunities in plastics in the chemical industries. We're joined by Steve Kratz and Bonnie Yu. Steve is the president of the Pennsylvania Chemical Industry Council, and in his role, Steve oversees all operations, advocacy, and initiatives of the council. Bonnie is a digital and transformation manager for the Shell Polymers Monaca site. She is defining the business of the future and developing tactical plans to fully leverage the capability of a digitally advanced plant. Thank you both for joining us today, and we appreciate you providing your insight and expertise. Just one quick last reminder to the attendees. If you have any questions, please enter them in the chat pod at the top or bottom of your screen. And at the end of both presentations, we'll get to as many as we can. So, Steve, the screen is yours.
Thanks, Matt. And yeah, really appreciate the opportunity here today and appreciate everybody's time today as we talk through opportunities for the chemical and plastics industry here in 2023. A lot of exciting things going on that we'll touch on today and look forward to questions at the end. Before we jump into that, just wanted to provide a little background on the Pennsylvania Chemical Industry Council. We are an advocacy organization acting on behalf of the state's chemical industry to provide legislative, regulatory, and best practices solutions for our member companies. Really, yeah, what it comes down to is we're trying to fuel that growth and make Pennsylvania an ideal home for the industry. Our members include chemical, refining, manufacturing, and distributors, environmental engineering, energy providers, and other consultants who serve the industry, and then we have affiliate members as well. So really, when Matt asked us to go through kind of what the opportunities are for 2023 for the industry, I thought it would be a good place to start to talk about what impacts the industry is already having in Pennsylvania, and certainly it's a lot. So really, looking at the economic impact, Pennsylvania is the 10th largest chemistry producing state in the nation. Invests $279 million to build and update equipments and facilities, and ships $4.68 billion in products to customers around the world. From a job standpoint, our industry supports more than 22,000 direct jobs and another 31,875 related jobs, and generates an additional 38,831 jobs in plastic and rubber products, $1.72 billion in annual payroll, an average salary of $76,117, which is 14% higher than the average manufacturing wage. So, you know, a lot of jobs, a lot of good paying jobs here in the Commonwealth. And we generate tax revenue, $209 million in state and local taxes and $398 million in federal taxes. So as you can see, the chemical and plastics industry is already having a big impact here in Pennsylvania. And as Bonnie and I will talk about today, we're really excited about what the future holds. As we'll talk through in a little bit here. So looking at, 2023 outlook at a glance, I really wanted to focus on five core areas. You know, certainly there's more areas that we could go to, but for today and the time period we have, really want to take a look at advanced recycling and the circular economy, industry-led sustainability and net zero emission goals, critical manufacturing growth and supply chains, certainly environmental justice and regulatory uncertainty, and then divided government and bipartisanship opportunities, which I know some of you may be chuckling at that, given the current state of where our General Assembly is at. But certainly, I think as an industry, we view a real opportunity here to work with both parties on, on great solutions for the future. So starting with advanced recycling, really it's becoming more and more critically important for companies that are looking to reduce its carbon footprint to provide more sustainable product options for customers. Certainly when we look at it, investors are demanding it more and more, customers are demanding it more and more, and it's just general good business practice. In Pennsylvania here, we're fortunate enough that, the legislature and the Wolf administration, and led by PCIC and many other partners, really pushed for advanced recycling legislation here in Pennsylvania, which opened the door for new opportunities. And, one of them is coming to fruition that's a member of the Chemical Industry Council, and that's Encina, who have proposed building a $1 billion advanced recycling facility in Point Township, Pennsylvania, north of Harrisburg. Which will take waste plastics and transform them back into their base chemicals that can be dropped in chemicals to use to make new products. Plastics are integral to every part of our everyday life, ranging from medical care to pharmaceuticals to electronics to lightweight materials for electric vehicles and airplanes to high efficient building materials, renewables, the list goes on. It's really how we deal with that plastic waste that's become an issue. And our members are really focused on tackling that challenge and figuring out ways to increase recycling, reuse, and manufacturing new products. But it's not just Encina. Another member of ours, Lanxess, headquartered in Pittsburgh, is recycling polycarbonate water bottles and transforming into materials like laptop covers. Recently, Nexus Circular announced that they're providing Braskem with plastic feedstock from its advanced recycling facility, with Braskem's having the objective of selling 300,000 metric tons of products with recycled content by 2025 and 1 million metric tons by 2030. So these are real numbers. These are real things that are happening, economic investment, creating jobs, and advancing sustainable solutions. Certainly Dow Packaging, Shell, which you'll hear from Bonnie, DuPont, and several others are also advancing these endeavors and investing heavily. I think there's a real opportunity, and you'll see more of that this year in 2023, of opportunities for government and industry to partner together to figure out more ways that we can make it more efficient and increase the amount of advanced recycling projects and investments that we're having here in Pennsylvania. So that's definitely one that we're keeping a close eye as a Chemical Industry Council and think there's real opportunity here, both from an economic standpoint, but also from a sustainability standpoint. Along the lines of sustainability, we often hear states and governments and leaders talk about setting net zero goals, carbon reduction goals, sustainability goals. Our members are living it. Across the board, most of our members have set their own aggressive carbon reduction sustainability goals. Certainly Shell has aggressive decarbonization goals and use sustainable solutions for the development of their Monaca plant. Monroe Energy is installing new water cooling towers at their refinery in Southeast Pennsylvania that's going to reduce water intake by 95 million gallons a day. UGI Energy Services is another one of our members that are investing heavily in renewable natural gas. BASF has entered two power agreements to offset up to 250 megawatts of their power production with renewable energy. Covestro set net zero goals for its operations by 2035, and 3M's aiming for carbon neutrality by 2050. And these are just a few examples. But the way we look at it is, we need to break free from this cycle of regulators versus innovators and instead come to the table and work together on common goals and common solutions. And we think there's a real, opportunity to do that. And allowing market and customer demand to be the leading factors in industry decisions and having government, really come in and be facilitators and supporters. And that's something that certainly our industry is focused on. We want to be a resource, not a deterrent to advancing sustainability goals. But at the same time, it's important that we are involved in those discussions and they're not done in a vacuum so that, we can make meaningful change for the future that supports the growth of the industry while also supporting environmental goals. I think this one was really brought to life during the recent pandemic, but really it's a decades old issue, and that's how to effectively move raw materials to manufacturers and end products to consumers. For a while it was called reshoring. I know some people still call it reshoring, but regardless of what you call it, it's an issue. And we saw that really come to light during the pandemic. Our modern world depends on efficient supply chains. And what we're seeing from our members and across the board is that there's real opportunity to bring manufacturing back to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. You know, certainly, you know, our members want to make sure that the raw materials that they're using are within a close, an efficient distance, you know, whether it's transportation cost increases or just, you know, plain challenges with you know, transportation and supply chains. It's becoming more and more efficient to have raw materials and feedstock closer to where you're manufacturing and then having your manufacturing closer to your customers. And certainly there's a real opportunity to do that. Yeah, so a couple examples of things that our members are doing is, yeah, Purolite opened up a resins facility in King of Prussia area, which they used to make life-saving drugs. You know, it's something that they're producing currently overseas in the UK, and they're expanding you know, to King of Prussia, where their headquarters is, to be closer to customers and be closer to, you know, supply chains. Another example is Croda. Yeah, they're located in Lamar, yeah, in central Pennsylvania, high performance pharma ingredients manufacturing. You know, and again, you know, same reasoning, being closer to supply chains, being closer to customers. And we're seeing more and more and more of that. One area that the industry really is looking to focus on is workforce development and employee recruitment, which remains a challenge. And partnering with those local colleges and universities and coming up with training programs and coming up with educational programs that are really going to make sure that we have the workforce here, but also, you know, working with government to facilitate, you know, the right amount of regulatory and financial incentives to come to Pennsylvania and to grow. Talking through some challenges, you know, certainly as state and federal regulators tackle challenges, you know, industry environmental leads are frantically trying to keep up, you know, compliance requirements, which often vary from state to state, which often vary from, you know, state to local or federal to state, you know, you name it. One of the big ones that our industry is tracking is regulating forever chemicals and environmental justice, which are really going to dominate, you know, the regulatory space this year. You know, recently Pennsylvania established MCLs for PFAS and PFOA. Right now the EPA is evaluating both MCLs, which would preempt, you know, Pennsylvania's established MCLs, and also at looking at establishing certain PFAS and PFOA and other forever chemicals as CERCLA hazardous chemicals. All of these have impacts on compliance, and all of these have impacts on a variety of industries. Yeah, for the most part, our industry has phased these out or in the process of phasing these out, but it's really the legacy issues from a compliance standpoint, you know, water management and things like that. And everyone's on board with doing what's right for the environment, what's right for the community. It's just a matter of the communication loop and making sure that everybody's on the same page and that everybody has the information that they need from a compliance standpoint. Again, it's keeping those lines of communication open between regulators and innovators. Environmental justice is another big one. You know, certainly the Biden administration has put a big emphasis on it. Governor Wolf has put a big emphasis on it. And we expect that Governor Shapiro as well is going to put a big emphasis on environmental justice and keeping up with those changes from a community outreach standpoint and making sure that everyone's in compliance and everybody knows how to not only comply, but also to report and stay in compliance. There's a number of other challenges as well. And then lastly, divided government. I think Pennsylvania's divided government can provide a unique opportunity for developing bipartisan solutions. Certainly the Shapiro administration has come in talking about the importance of bipartisanship and working together to come to common solutions. Certainly there's still a Republican majority in the Senate and likely to be a slim Democratic majority in the House. And to get things done, that's going to require compromise. It's going to require coming together and working together to advance solutions. And that's not a bad thing. Certainly I think it's tough to imagine here in the current political environment we're in, both nationally and at the state level. But to get things done, we're going to need to work together And that's more important now than ever. And at the same time, there's a lot of education that needs to take place. There's more than 55 new members in the Pennsylvania House and Senate, varying backgrounds, varying knowledge of the industry, and certainly, you know, that provides a challenge, but it also provides an opportunity to really, you know, get in and build relationships and talk about all the great things that our industry is doing. And that Bonnie's going to talk about here in a second, with Shell specifically. And as well as, you know, changes in legislative leadership, you know, again, varying backgrounds and knowledge of our industry there. So with that, that's the five areas, you know, that I wanted to cover today and the time that we have together. Certainly, yeah, at the end, happy to answer questions. There's a lot of different things we could have talked about today, but I hope you found value in what we did cover. And with that, I'll kick it over to Bonnie.
Thanks, Steve. So thanks for having me today. I'm here to tell you a little bit more about Shell Polymers Monaca, just a quick update on where we're at with our facility and our plans for a sustainable future. So 2022 was a great year. After a 10-year journey since initial design, we are at last operational. So this is a significant milestone, not only for Shell, but for the Appalachian region, as we will be producing polyethylene more locally to our customers for the first time. Starting with an unrivaled customer experience, we are using our advantage location and advantage feedstocks to deliver the type of performance chemicals that our customers demand. We have had many challenging moments in delivering the plant as well, including building a mega project inland from the coast, which included lifting bridges and rerouting roads, and of course, a global pandemic, just to name a few. Currently, we are continuing to ramp up our production while qualifying our many grades of polyethylene to sell to our customers. Now that the plant is started up, we've shifted our focus to safely operate the plant and run a new business. At Shell Polymers, we are committed to delivering cleaner energy solutions in line with our Powering Progress strategy. So Shell has ambitious goals to contribute to the circular economy by reaching a plastic recycling goal of 1 million tons per year. Shell is a founding member of the Alliance to End Plastic Waste, which includes more than 40 companies involved in plastic production and use. The Alliance has pledged $1.5 billion in the next 5 years towards reaching its ambition by improving recycling infrastructure, developing technology, educating society, and cleaning up areas where plastic waste is concentrated. In 2022, we took our first steps towards circularity by attaining our ISCC Plus certification, which enables us to sell circular polyethylene through our integrated value chain. Shell has also sponsored a recycling facility and education program in our local community of Beaver County. And there is also an exciting announcement on the horizon that I'm not at liberty to tell you today regarding this partnership. As we continue to build our base business, we are also committed to decarbonizing our plant. So I saw the question in there regarding our decarbonization plans at Monaca. This is really geared towards delivering towards our net zero goal by 2050. In 2022, we continued to progress our decarbonization by evaluating regional subsurface storage possibilities. But decarbonizing our own emissions is only the first step. This graphic is a good demonstration of that. So there's a lot on here, but really what I've put in the yellow box is to highlight what we're currently focused on in the near term. So this investment in infrastructure into decarbonizing our own plant opens up the opportunity to provide end-to-end decarbonization solutions to our neighbors and also transforms the region to be the energy hub to provide clean energy solutions. We believe in Powering Progress, not only for Western Pennsylvania, but for the tri-state area of Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Ohio. But the path to get to a truly clean world is not easy. At Shell, we believe in a just transition where energy is still affordable and no one gets left behind. We see this region as being pivotal because it provides an advantage feedstock to produce the products the world needs, whether that be natural gas or blue hydrogen. Our local industry, which includes refining, iron, steel, and cement, are vital to the economy, but are also high emitters. We can future-proof our industry and provide jobs by looking to sequester carbon emissions while we look for more sustainable ways to deliver energy and products in the future. collectively, we can transition this region right here to be carbon free. Our hub also relies on many partnerships. So you may have seen the headline in the news about our collaboration with US Steel and Equinor. Since then, we have also collaborated with Team PA and Equinor in the Decarbonization Network of Appalachia, aimed at delivering blue hydrogen for the tri-state region in conjunction with our carbon capture and storage initiatives. This is only the first step of many to reach our decarbonization goals. Longer term, which is not in the yellow box right now, we envision a future where we transition to green energy when costs are more competitive and we can do it profitably. As you can see from the slide, we have an ambitious plan to deliver an end-to-end decarbonization hub, which includes many opportunities for this region in the future. As we look towards 2023, we are actively seeking partnerships with local industry to address plastic waste and how we can help enhance recycling laws that will enable the circular economy. We are also working closely with Steve on recycling policies and programs. We hope to collaborate with two industry experts, Ravago and Nexus, utilizing Altera's advanced recycling technology to establish a plastic recycling hub right here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. We are also exploring a project that would enable one of the largest advanced plastic recycling technology hubs in the world in partnership with Freepoint. Shell is also collaborating on a research front with Google X to test new technologies that could revolutionize collection, sortation, and processing efficiency of advanced recycling grade plastics from waste and recycle streams that can be implemented across North America. In 2023, we will also continue to progress the development of a decarbonization hub for the Appalachian region, support changes in legislation, and modernize pore space legislation and drive classics well primacy, which are pivotal for advancing our decarbonization of our polymers facility, as well as the larger hub. We will also continue to pursue a hydrogen hub in the Appalachian region to enable market liftoff of a hydrogen economy within the tri-state region. So that's our overview of what we're planning to do this next year and many years to come. So we're really looking for hoping to advance the sustainability agenda in the region and hoping for partnerships along the way.
There you go. More great stuff for you on the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. Some great stuff there from our friend Matt Henderson, who recently hosted a series of webinars. And now it is time for Fender's Fast and or Fun Facts via Skype. Here's Rusty Fender. Rusty, what do you have for us this week?
Thank you, Bill and DC. And coming up this Wednesday, back in 1992, the 12th of April, one of the first cities, actually the first city in the country, to ban smoking in all indoor restaurants. It was New York City, April 12th. Yeah, 1992. Wow, 31 years ago. Some of the interesting things we know about smoking bans, D.C. Smoking ban policies implemented in most American states and cities. But again, they are considered to be necessary and relevant, but are still heard from critics and supporters. Here's an interesting note. Restrictions on cigarette smoking can be traced back as early as the 16th century when they started smoking tobacco up until now. And the issue is still the most controversial as far as human rights, you know, the right to smoke, I would assume.
Right.
One thing I never got involved in, I know you didn't either.
Nah.
And now it's just so expensive. Smoking ban is a policy that prohibits smoking in any public places, malls, parks, workplaces, government offices, and especially schools. Some of the pros of smoking bans: they reduce the risk of secondhand smoke. Secondhand smoke is even more toxic, they say, than firsthand smoke because it already contains the expulsion of chemicals and different antibodies from the person doing the smoking.
Yeah.
They lessen air pollution. They improve work productivity. Proponents point out that if you do not smoke in the office, you have a 35% increase in your work productivity.
Wow.
And I kind of agree with that because they should give the people who don't smoke as many chances to go and take a 5-minute break outside as the smokers do.
Right.
That is the truth. They decrease the possibility of fires and they reduce waste. Cigarette butts are the number one non-biodegradable component and clog water systems all over the world if thrown into the environment. Some of the cons from smoking, they take away freedom from people. Yeah, it's a violation on one's personal liberty. They can affect businesses, business owners who are not in favor of smoking bans, as well as smokers who are used to smoking in public places, argue that restricting smoking can drive customers away. That, you know, that would probably be hold true in bars and nightclubs.
Mm-hmm.
And they drive people, again, to lesser tax revenues from the government. So people against smoking bans are concerned on the effect of government revenues if the push for smoke-free states will be implemented. Of course, 80% of the revenue on taxes come from either liquor or from tobacco. So, yeah, I can see that as a business plan. Yeah. And D.C., are smoking bans effective? Do they work?
Are smoking bans effective? Well, I guess it comes down to have the tobacco companies suffered profit losses. I'm going to say no, they are not effective.
No is the correct answer. And not only because of the loss of revenue for business, but also they drive people to smoke somewhere else. So I guess what they're saying is there's two ways to look at this. What you said is absolutely correct. And also the other effect is correct as well. It lessens profits in business, the economy, and it really doesn't stop anyone from smoking. It just stops them from smoking where you want them to not to smoke.
It just sends them to another location to smoke.
Exactly right. With their 355 5-minute breaks a day, which means they get probably nothing done at work because they're smoking outside all the time. I know that for a fact. So it's a 50-50 proposition. If you're a smoker, I guess, DC, you say it doesn't work. If you're a smoker, then you don't want people smoking next to you while you're eating. I'm one of those people, and I guess it does work. So those are some of the fun facts this week about smoking and non-smoking, DC.
Very nice. Thank you for that, Rusty. Fender's Fast Facts here on the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. Please stay here for more.
The shale gas industry is here and will be around for a long time. Learn everything you need to know right now. The Shale Gas News on 94.3 FM, The Talker.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. Last couple of weeks, we've been playing for you the State of American Energy 2023 program from the American Petroleum Institute, and you can find the entire thing at api.org. Here is the conclusion, part three, the remainder of State of American Energy 2023.
The core of our energy needs are still going to be fulfilled by American oil and American natural gas. And what's great about coming to a place like Midland and Odessa and the Permian Basin is because I get to see and meet the people who are doing it every single day.
All forms of energy are coming from here. And I think education about that should, you know, get out to the rest of the country. You know, I think a lot of people think of the Permian just as oil and gas, and that's really about it.
In Midland, Odessa, we say we all are in the oil field. Regardless what business we're in, we're all in the oil field. And so every time the ebb and flow of anything like that, it impacts all of us. It impacts this restaurant, who walks in, who doesn't walk in. It impacts our ability to source groceries.
There's sometimes this idea of, oh, Permian Basin, West Texas, oh, dry West Texas, it's fine, we don't need them. But that's such a missed opportunity. We have the brightest men and women out here who are working day in and day out, who either grew up here, have moved here, so that they can work in the energy industry.
People have stepped up in amazing ways to make sure that we are all proud to be a part of West Texas and to operate and to live here.
And I would challenge anyone who comes out to West Texas, meet the guys and gals that are doing the hard work. They are working to provide a better life for their family. Who can argue with that?
Our nation's capital. Behind me, solutions to America's energy challenges are debated nearly every day. How do we make enough energy for our growing country? And how do we do it responsibly and affordably? These are big questions, and the answers are increasingly complex. That's why it's the American Petroleum Institute's charge to keep Washington, D.C. focused on U.S.-made solutions, not just the debate. Hi, I'm Amanda Eversole, Chief Advocacy Officer at the American Petroleum Institute. Natural gas and oil are produced by leveraging data, research, and new technologies that emerge every year. The way we made energy in 2013 isn't the way we're making energy today. And the way we'll do it in 2033? Well, that's what this industry is constantly defining and refining. As we just heard, there are new and better solutions being made each day. But laws and regulations, well, they change at a much slower pace. And that's why Washington, D.C. has to make sure that laws and regulations champion American innovators that are developing the best solutions to meet consumer needs. Our government must create a system in which new technologies can be implemented, investments are encouraged, and more products can be made for our growing population. But what does that mean for Washington? What actions must be taken? Well, we have a few ideas. Up next, you'll hear from American Petroleum Institute CEO Mike Summers on how Washington can make the U.S. not only secure in its energy, but a leader for the world's energy future. From the tundra of Alaska to the Gulf Coast of Louisiana, we have the force of millions working towards achieving this. The solution is here, and we must pursue it together.
There's no doubt Washington, D.C. is an important place. But what happens in our nation's capital rarely gets its start there. The ideas, the innovation, the progress, all of that comes from the hardworking towns and cities, like right here in Midland, Texas. Across America, in any of the hundreds of communities that support the production, refinement, and distribution of energy, American energy is a cornerstone for our way of life. It runs our economy. It keeps our country safe. It powers our ability to innovate and do more than we ever dreamed possible. Over the last year, all of us have seen why energy policy really matters. We've seen it in our own lives, in our communities, and around the world. For decades, Washington, D.C. has debated policy pathways for reliable, affordable energy for everyone. But while the debate waged on, our industry stayed focused on delivering solutions. That's why I'm here today in Midland. The millions of men and women in America's natural gas and oil industry work hard every day and night to deliver reliable, affordable energy. And we stand ready to answer the call to produce more energy and to make it better, safer, and cleaner. But we need support from Washington. Either we strengthen our energy security, or we become increasingly reliant on unstable regions of the world for our energy. The solution is here, but only if we chart a path for it to succeed. At API, we have a plan that champions the people who are innovating and advancing solutions for our energy future. It's a plan in three parts: make, move, and improve. It all starts with make, because the basics of America's energy challenges are pretty straightforward. When it comes to energy, Americans are suffering under the biggest supply imbalance in over a generation, between what we have and what we need to live our lives. And the government isn't doing enough to lessen it. Under the Biden administration, our government has leased fewer federal acres for oil and natural gas production than any other president since World War II, and has suggested no offshore leasing for years. That's despite the years it takes to plan, invest, permit, and develop energy, and projections that America and the world will need oil for decades to come. Experts say demand for global oil and natural gas will increase tremendously over the next 30 years. In 2023 alone, it will increase by 2.7 million barrels a day. And if America doesn't meet that demand, then that demand will be met by other countries that may not share our values or be reliable partners, countries that don't work to protect their environment and their communities. So the first step to solving energy challenges is to harness the full potential of American natural gas and oil production, and do it now by increasing access on and offshore. Our industry is already taking on the challenge. But the greatest achievements will require Washington to work alongside us too. Producing more energy counts for very little if we can't get it where it needs to go. And that's why we need to focus on how we move energy to where it's needed most. Today, it often takes more time and money to get permission to build a pipeline than it takes to actually construct the pipeline itself. And the consequences are real. Americans in New England sometimes pay up to 8 times more for energy than people in Appalachia because the government won't approve a pipeline to move natural gas to states like Connecticut, Rhode Island, and Massachusetts. We need our government to greenlight more pipelines to safely move our energy across the U.S. and more terminals to let ships bring our energy around the world. So let's do it. Let's invest in energy infrastructure, streamline the review process, and remove needless bottlenecks so we can harness the full potential of American energy. This industry is filled with so much potential, not just to meet demand, but to meet demand in ways that are safe for our environment. We've already created groundbreaking emissions reduction technologies, and more are on the way. Americans agree that taking care of this amazing land and reducing emissions is important. The question is, how do we work to improve together? It's not regulation alone. It's innovation. It's science and skill. It's innovators like the men and women who work here, whose ingenuity powered the shale revolution. By replacing much of the coal use with natural gas to make electricity, America lowered its CO2 emissions in the power sector more than any single one of Washington's climate policies ever has. We've reduced our CO2 emissions to some of the lowest levels in a generation, all while demand and consumption have continued to rise. We're innovating in our production processes to slash methane emissions intensity, a potent greenhouse gas, and we're working every day to find ways to bring them down even further. Not only can we lower U.S. emissions, but we can also capture some of the remaining emissions. To do that, we need stronger support for the implementation of carbon capture. And what about new fuels like hydrogen? Recent studies have shown that new fuels coming online show great promise in further meeting growing demand while also reducing emissions. We can fix this together. America has enough resources to supply ourselves and our allies for decades to come. This wasn't always the case. For decades, presidents of every political party have put a premium on producing more energy in America to make our country more self-sufficient. They know it's not just good for our country, but for the world. Yet for some reason, policymakers in Washington are choosing another path, one with real consequences. Now is the time for Washington to help. Our industry is ready to do the work to make, move, and improve American energy. The solution is here, in America. Let's talk about that so-called energy transition for a minute. The truth of the matter is we're gonna need all sources of energy in the future, right? We know that there are gonna be a lot more renewables in the energy mix in the future because world population is going up by 2 billion people by 2050. And energy needs are expected to actually go up by 50%. So we shouldn't really talk about an energy transition. I like to talk about an energy addition.
I think we have to stop thinking about the Republicans and the Democrats, but remind ourselves that we're all Americans. We're all in the same boat, and that is to make our communities better. And just get over the quibbling and the fighting and realize that, you know, we're all from the same country here. We should all want the same thing, and that's moving this country forward.
So let me tell you about a program program that we run at the American Petroleum Institute. It's a group called Energy Citizens. It's a grassroots network of energy employees and community leaders and people who want to be involved in this industry. So I would encourage you, after our conversation today, to go and join what I think is going to be a real movement for energy reform in this country. Well, I want to thank everybody for being here today. It's an honor to be here in Midland, Texas, and especially to be here in the Permian Basin, the most prolific basin in the world, and the one that I know is going to lead the future for us to continue to produce affordable, reliable, and ever cleaner energy for the world. Thanks, everybody.
And there you have it, the State of American Energy 2023 presentation from the American Petroleum Institute. API.org is the website. You can find the entire thing there in case you you missed some of the earlier parts. Here on the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we will do the top five stories of the past week from MarcellusDrilling.com, and we'll also get to the jobs segment brought to us by Lackawanna College, their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Stay right here for more of the Shale Gas News.
Keeping you informed and educated, the Shale Gas News on 94.3 FM, The Talker.
Welcome back. We're so glad you're listening to the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. Coming up in just a few minutes, we will talk about jobs. Yes, the jobs segment, careers in the energy industry, and there's plenty of them out there, and you're going to want to hear all about that. But first, top five. Yes, the top five stories of the past week from MarcellusDrilling.com. Each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. So here you go, a summary of the top five most read stories on MDN over the past 7 days. And coming in at number five last week, Ohio lawsuit filed against Utica fracker accuses subsurface trespass. In a case initially filed last summer in Ohio, a Belmont County mineral rights owner alleges that Rice Drilling, now owned by EQT, drained natural gas from a rock layer it did not have the right to access, according to the signed lease. Golden Eagle Resources says the lease allowed Rice to drill down only as far as the Utica Shale layer, which Rice did. However, Golden Eagle says fractures from Rice's fracking of the Utica layer reached down into the adjacent Point Pleasant layer and drained some of the gas from the Point Pleasant, too. And that's a no-no, according to the lease. When pumping water and sand into a fracked hole, the pressure creates cracks throughout the rock layer. Those cracks allow natural gas and oil to flow freely into the borehole or well. In borehole and the well. Since the Utica and Point Pleasant layers are adjacent, with the Utica immediately above the Point Pleasant, it's conceivable that fracking could cause cracks downward into the Point Pleasant from a Utica well. An Ohio federal court is allowing this lawsuit to continue, even though Rice vigorously contests it and has sought to have it thrown out. Rusty?
And number four, DC, wild swings in net gas price here to stay for the foreseeable future. That's a quote. The past 18 months have been a wild ride for natural gas prices. We've gone from years of low prices to spiking near $10 for a million BTU. In just the past few months, prices have dropped like a rock. The price dropped to a fresh 30-month low yesterday. This is a few days ago. The NYMEX price now threatens to dip below $2 per multi-million BTU. That's crazy. According to analysts speaking with Argus Media, we can expect continued wild gyrations in the price of natural gas for the foreseeable future. Some analysts say that volatility, which are sudden spikes up and down, in the price of natural gas could be here to stay, as in permanently.
The third most popular story over the past week, four possible outcomes for stalled Mountain Valley Pipeline project. The 303-mile Mountain Valley Pipeline that runs from Wetzel County, West Virginia to Pittsylvania County, Virginia is 94% complete, has been for 2 years, but sits idle, waiting for the other 6% to be completed so it can start up and begin to flow Marcellus and Utica molecules to the southeastern U.S. Lawsuits funded by big green groups with foreign connections have blocked the completion of the project for years. It would be fair to say the project is currently in a stalemate with big green radicals who somehow have co-opted the help of three Democrat judges who sit on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit. Stalemates don't go on forever. One way or the other, this situation will get resolved, likely this year. There are four potential outcomes for the stalled MVP project, a project critical to the future of the Marcellus Utica. One, Equitrans and the other investors could walk away and not finish it, the same way Dominion walked away from its competing project, the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. Two, Congress could pass a law overriding the Fourth Circuit and pushing MVP over the finish line. Joe Manchin has tried to do this with his, quote, permitting reform bill, an effort that was stillborn because Manchin sold out and voted for Joe Biden's Green New Deal, renamed the Inflation Reduction Act. There does seem to be new interest in passing a permitting reform Save MVP bill, although a Biden signature is not assured. Three, the stalemate can continue until either number one or number two happens. Investors will not wait a lot longer for Equitrans to complete this project, so we don't think this option is very likely. And four, the Fourth Circuit could allow recently issued permits to stand, allowing MVP to finish construction. Given the three-judge panel composed of Democrats has ruled against MVP in something like 12 of 15 challenges, we don't give this option much of a chance.
Number two, D.C., NYMEX Henry Hub crashing and burning, the lowest close in 30 months. We consider $2 a multi-million BTU to be the basement when it comes to the price of natural gas trading as the nation's benchmark, the Henry Hub Index in southern Louisiana. So last week, we almost hit the bottom of the basement while gas closing at $2.03. What happens if gas goes below $2? Do we call that the sub-basement? Are we breaking through the barrier and right down into hell? Whatever you call it, prepare yourself. Why did gas tumble again to a new 30-month low? And will it go lower? According to these experts who ponder and analyze these things, there are two main factors for the current low price, which ultimately boil down to less demand and a lot more supply. On the less demand side, the weather forecast shows the eastern half of the United States will be warmer than normal for this time over the past 10 years and up to the next 10 days. On the more supply side, natural gas production held above 100 billion cubic feet per day on Tuesday. That level is on par with the start of the week and recent peak levels. So in a postscript, the very next day after this story ran, closed at $1.99, breaking the $2 barrier.
Okay, here you go. The number one most popular story on MarcellusDrilling.com over the past week. Diversified gives old natural gas wells new life, mining crypto. Diversified Energy, formerly Diversified Gas and Oil, with major assets in the Marcellus Utica region and other regions too, owns approximately 8 million acres of leases with close to 70,000 mostly conventional oil and gas wells. The company's business model is to buy lower producing wells on the cheap and find ways to make them more productive. One of the new ways Diversified is looking to make money with old wells is by mining cryptocurrency at wells in remote locations not hooked up to a pipeline network. Diversified wants to try it with a well in northwestern Pennsylvania. Unsurprisingly, it's generating some controversy. So there you go. The top five stories thousands of people read this past week on MDN. If you'd like to keep track of the latest Marcellus and Utica news each day, it's easy. Just subscribe to Marcellus Drilling News at MarcellusDrilling.com. Click on the subscribe link. It's only $7.95 a month or $79.50 for the whole year. Now it's time for the job segment, exploring careers in the energy industries, gas and others, brought to us by Lackawanna College and their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty.
Thank you, DC. And we'll start in Pennsylvania, where Halliburton, the big drillers, looking for a service operator level one. That's for their cementing division out of Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. CalFrac Well Services, looking for a frac operator. It's for the entire state of Pennsylvania. TC Energy, looking for an operations project specialist. It's out of Washington, Pennsylvania, southwest of Pittsburgh. TD Williamson Incorporated, looking for 10 roustabouts. They'll be headquartered in Burgettstown's traveling position, however. PP&L, two different positions, a district service technician. It's a trainee. It's paid. It's out of Frackville, Schuylkill County. And then PP&L is looking for an engineer level one or two, a hybrid position that's remote in Allentown after 120 days at home. Atwell LLC looking for a CAD technician. It's a hybrid position remote in Cannonsburg. Neighbors looking for derrick hands, 10 positions out of Uniontown. And Penn Hills Resources looking also for 10 roustabouts. That'll be based in Kane. In Ohio, Quasar Energy Group looking for an office coordinator out of Independence, Exactus Energy, an inspector, and a drone operator. It's a solar division out of Columbus. General Electric looking for an engineer for the entire Buckeye state of Ohio, traveling position, of course. Marathon Petroleum, a pipeline controller out of Findlay. Blue Racer Midstream, an opening for a field operator posted for Cambridge, Ohio. OWS Energy and Acquisitions Company Incorporated. They posted a senior landman opening headquartered in Louisville. And Hubble Incorporated looking for welders. Once again, flux core stick shielded metal arc at Stick Welding out of Hamilton. In West Virginia, Shenandoah Energy Partners, they have just posted an opening for a title abstractor. Actually, it's title abstractors, plural, two needed out of Bridgeport. Diversified Energy Company looking for well tenders and rig floor hands. Now, the well tenders will be based in Hamlin. The rig floor hands are traveling positions headquartered in Bridgeport, West Virginia. American Electric Power looking for an energy production supervisor out of Winfield. Hickory Energy Services, a well tender. A flowback operator. It's one and the same. A well tender and a flowback operator based in Blacksville. And then roustabouts, five roustabouts and five labor hands. We assume that's the same position. That's out of Moundsville, West Virginia. Tally Energy Operators looking for an MWD field operator. It'll be based in Fairmont. Select Energy Services, a CDL driver and a well tester. That's out of New Martinsville. Aerotech looking for an oil and gas laborer. It's out of Wheeling. Billfinger looking for a pipe welder, same deal. Flux core stick shielded metal arc stick welding out of Inwood. And New Park Mats and Integrative Services, a heavy equipment operator level one, also out of Bridgeport. In New York State, General Electric Gas and Power looking for a gas power project scheduling and project contract management internship. Five positions. It's for summer of 23, begins June 1st. So hurry, get your applications in. GE. Their headquarters in Schenectady, New York. New York State Electric and Gas, NYSEG, looking for a supervisor for the electric line operations out of Vestal. Kiley Pipeline Integrity, an operator for their construction division, a traveling position for the entire Empire State of New York. And Fuel Energy Services USA, looking for five roustabouts and five helpers out of Horseheads in the Binghamton, Vestal, New York area. And those, as DC mentioned, are the jobs this week sponsored by Lackawanna College. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Next year will be 10 years since we'll be beginning our 10th year since we started the Shale Gas News right here. We hope to see you next week, same time, same radio stations as we begin our 10th year here on the Shale Gas News. And for Bill DeRosia, DC Taylor, I'm Rusty Fender. Thanks again for listening to the Shale Gas News.